discipleship that went a little bit past many, but when's he going to quit talking about discipleship, leadership? Well, before, remember back, we did the book of Ephesians. You remember how long Ephesians was? How many chapters is Ephesians? Six. Yeah, that's good. See, it's a quiz. Why did it take 2 years? When is he going to quit talking about Ephesians? Okay, how about this one? We just, the most recent one. When's he going to quit talking about spiritual warfare? Remember that long thing? Before Ephesians, we had a leadership series on 1 and 2 Timothy and Titus. When is he going to quit talking about? Okay. Before that, what was it? What's your memory? Come on. John. John was before that. No, John was before that. How long did we do John? 2 years. When's he going to quit talking about John? Well, we get to chapter 21, okay? Before that, it was Nehemiah, the rebuilding of the walls, which was long. So the rumor is nothing new. So anyway, I just, since that came back to me this week, I just thought I'd throw it out in lieu of my message today. But I do have one, I have one thing to say about that. First of all, sorry. My face keeps moving. Okay. Okay, that doesn't bother me. Okay? I'll tell you why. Okay, I'll tell you what bothers me about that. My voice is changing. And I'm not doing anything. This is so much fun. You know, Peter and John and Paul didn't have to deal with this stuff, did they? I think they had, like, booming voices. They were deep voices. All right, well, what bothers me about that? Not the fact that it takes a while on some of these things. But when you say that, you see, I don't know who's saying that, so I can talk. This is family, right? We can have a family time, okay? Family time? Okay, family. You do it to me, I'll do it back. Okay. Okay, what that implies, think about it. When you take that out a little bit, that implies that what you're thinking is that I have not been hearing from the Lord. That's what that's saying. Okay? About what to teach. And that means that I've been kind of doing my favorite stuff, which isn't true because my favorite stuff's a lot of fun. Okay? I haven't been doing that. But you see where that goes? That, and you know what? I want to hear from the Lord, and especially about what I teach you. And if I'm not, you need to let me know that nothing's coming through, okay, that I'm in the left field. I want to know that. Okay, but I believe I've been hearing from the Lord specifically on what we've been teaching. So anyway, that's just a little bit of from me to you. In spite of all that, here's my message for today. All right. Looking at what Yeshua did, what he did. This is a lot of fun. He poured himself totally into 12 men and their families. Their families, too, by the way. They were all there, too. He didn't go into the multitudes. It was a small group. It had to do with discipleship. But he was making disciples. All rabbis did that. But he was making disciples of Yeshua, of him, a certain kind of a disciple. And what was involved was leadership development. Leadership development. Why? Because as, you know, we did 2 years in the book of Acts and just recently finished that, these people were being raised up and trained to lead the Messianic community. Who else is going to do it? Nobody else. All right? And we've seen the book of Acts, and Luke's reports are just marvelous. These guys, they all started joining in, but they hadn't been trained. And so then the ones who had been trained train the others. So leadership training and development. Their calling and their task is developed all through the book of Acts. We have been there. The purpose of the Messianic community was and is to reach out. The book of Acts is a reach out book. And take the message, okay, the most important message of all time, the message of Yeshua to all people in all places. And there was urgency back then. And there is today. That hasn't changed. I'll tell you in a minute why that is. Okay? Those people out there, okay, where Janice is going. She's going out there, by the way. Read between the lines on this one. She's going out there. All right? And I just love this. Okay? I do. But you know why? their eternal destiny is at stake. You know, this morning I was in my worship, since I'm ending the mini-series today on leadership and discipleship, I'm thinking, well, after the bar mitzvah, talk with my hands, okay? This is not being videoed, right? Okay, good. Okay. He said, laugh at me. All right. Their eternal destiny is at stake. And so maybe what's coming in a couple of weeks, or a little bit after that, is some detail on that, which I'll tell you in a minute. But the point is this, that without Yeshua, they have no hope. Now, if you think otherwise, we're going to talk. Without Yeshua, they have no hope. Let me take it one step further. Let's kick it up a notch. They will be eternally lost. That's how important this is. Okay? There is no other plan or way. God provided, he did, but one way and one plan. And for those of you who think there's another covenant, that Jews are saved because they are Jews, and they kind of came in, that they're atoned for without being aware of it, and they don't know it, look at where that leads. See, that's a future message. Very soon, actually. That leads to a place where, well, then we don't have to tell them. They don't really need to know. This is you know where this comes from, don't you? This is the heart of Satan himself. They don't need to know. Because if we go and tell them something they don't really need to know, we're going to rock the boat with them. Let's just be friends and nice. Okay? And then, you know, and as far as the Great Commission, you know, what we do is end up not evangelizing, not reaching out. And it's the ultimate compromise. So, today's message. Okay, the duct tape might come in next week, okay? There. All right. I'm calling this successful discipleship. He said, wait 1 minute. No, it's okay. I think we're okay. Except it's not working, right? What are we doing? What was wrong with it? Doing something. Okay. Okay. You okay? All right. I'm okay with this. We did this kind of stuff in our sermon preparation classes in seminary. We had to give sermons with lots of distractions going on. It hasn't changed a bit since. Successful discipleship. Okay, back to what I'm being criticized about. Yeshua commissioned his disciples to be. Okay, are you a disciple? He commissioned them to be a light to the nations. Okay, here's a question. Are you going to wake up some morning and turn on Fox News, all right, and hear that the Great Commission has been fulfilled? Everyone everywhere has had the opportunity to hear about Yeshua and make a decision about him, and it's on the news. I get the phone call, Bob, did you hear that? And then you rejoice in that news. Wow, they did it. Or are you going to wake up some morning in a remote part of the world in a yurt? I know what a yurt is. Okay? I've been in them, actually. Exhausted, cold, and wondering, what did I eat last night? But knowing that it was you that brought them the message about Yeshua. And guess what? Wonder of wonders, they believed you. And this morning, when you get up and eat whatever they have, you're going to be worshiping together with people that are ethnically different, with a different language. But as a community of believers, singing, dancing, praising, because they know Yeshua, because you told them, because you went. And faith, just like Paul said, faith came by hearing, hearing by the word, and you were the messenger who brought the word. Will you be rejoicing because of the visionaries or because you are one? Hmm.
What's worth it to me is when our youth come to me and they get it. They get it. And they say, I'm going. And I'm getting ready to get it. Yeshua imparted his message within a particular context. Those that he commissioned were sent out. Now listen to this. Knowing only that context. And they weren't expected to add to it, to take away from it, to modify it, or only do what they had been taught. To teach it. They were commissioned to teach it. Yeshua's instructions were to teach them, the nations, what I have commanded you. Okay, that was the context. Only that. Nothing else. Not the teachings of others, even though they're good. As Luke starts the book of Luke and the book of Acts, he says, I'm writing this stuff down to tell you what Yeshua did and what Yeshua said. Okay, that's the focus. It's not what other people did and said, what Yeshua did and what he said. The Great Commission was, this is the context, we're narrowing things down. The Great Commission was given to Jewish believers to be the head and not the tail, okay, to impart the person and teaching of Yeshua to all nations. Pretty big responsibility. So the question then is, what were they taught by Yeshua to go and teach? What did they then do? We spent 2 years in the book of Acts talking about all that stuff. But what it's called is Messianic Judaism. That's what it's called. They were taught not a list of facts, but a lifestyle. And they were to impart that lifestyle to the other nations who had a different lifestyle. It's not this one, okay? But they were to teach this. How to live a life that pleases God. And how to treat other people. How to treat people in your family. Okay, so the question this morning to us is, okay, since some of you are unhappy that I keep pounding on the Great Commission and missions and all that kind of stuff, then let's bring it home and do some inreach instead. Okay? Okay? Put your toes out. Toes all out. So the question is, how are we doing on this? How are we doing? Let's reach in. If Yeshua were to walk in that door this morning in person today, I can't help but think that maybe he might ask us a question. You ready? It goes kind of like this. Okay, I have a question. I mean, if he were to come in, I'd give him the mic, okay? Trust me. And same with Elijah. He's going to get the mic. Okay. I can't help but think he would take the mic and say, okay, why do you call me Lord, but don't do what I say? What would be your answer? Especially if you named names and went around the room. We do it like one at a time. It's like, What would be your answer? You know, sometimes Yeshua has asked questions in the Gospels that can't be responded to impulsively. Like a lot of time we just fire back an answer without thinking about it. Sometimes you need to think it through. Like that one, maybe you should think it through. An example is, there's several, but an example would be to Peter. A question Yeshua asked Peter following a couple of events. Now, Peter's by trade a fisherman. He has his own boat, his own business. But there was a storm. This is the second storm. And they were sinking. They were all going to die. And then Yeshua came to them walking on the water. Peter got out of the boat. He said, if it's you, let me come to you. Yeshua said, come on. Peter walks in the water, sees the wind and the waves, gets afraid, sinks. Yeshua grabs him. I love that picture. The painting where Yeshua's grabbing Peter. He's the rescue. And what was Peter's prayer? You know that I pray this every day? Lord, save me! Great prayer. Short to the point. He did. Bam! Brought him in the boat. And then he says, peace. He says, shalom. And the wind and the waves just stop, and there's a great calm. Pretty impressive, right? But that's not where the story ends. You know, he goes to Peter and asks him a question. He says, oh, you of little faith. And here's the question. Why did you doubt? Why did you doubt? Peter might have been thinking, well, you know, Lord, you really don't understand. I mean, the wind, the waves, you know, the boat's filling up with water. It's dark out here. Yeshua might say, Peter, I know all about that stuff. I was there, okay? I was there. That's the point, Peter. I was there. Why did you doubt? I was there. In this case, Peter had enough wisdom to be silent and not answer. There is no good answer to that question. There is no excuse. Why did you doubt me? I was there with you. Sometimes we just have to go, yeah, okay, I get it. He might have gone on to say something like this. I have given clear instructions on what I want you to do. I like this line I wrote down. He has given us clear instructions on what he wants us to do and on what he wants us to say, even where. Okay? That's my life. That is my life to do that. Sometimes you say and do other things. Yeshua might say, well, those are nice and they're good things, but they're not of eternal value. They don't make a difference in eternity, those things that you're focusing on. The term messianic means Messiah-like, like him, to be like him. And this is the key line of the message. A disciple is someone who is learning to be like their master. That's what he was doing in discipleship, teaching them to be like him. They were to be like their rabbi, all right? Now, the difference is here, don't you be like me. Okay, you be like him. That's the difference. Please don't be like me. But they were learning and being taught to be like him. That is what discipleship is all about. So the question is, who is your master? Who were you emulating? Messianic believers are to be under the lordship of Yeshua, under his authority, not something else. Not something else. His lordship. He says, you call me Lord, then you'd best do what I say. That's how I know. We're to be grounded in his word, not other writings. They're important. And I read them too. But there's a big difference in what is inspired and what is not. We're to be grounded in his word. We're to go out and give his word. Knowing, and we're to know the truth. Yeshua said, I am the truth. We're to be living the truth. He said, I am the life. That life is the one he imparts. We're supposed to impart that by example, by word and by deed. Discipleship is a lifestyle. It's not a list of facts. It's not getting the right answers. We're to walk as he walked. We're to be his ambassadors, representing him to the world. And by the way, that vision is his. It's his vision. It's his heart. That's pretty important. In the book of Acts that we just finished, the leadership of Israel, there's a lot of humor there. The leadership of Israel marveled as they perceived three things about Yeshua's disciples. In Acts chapter 4, they perceived, first of all, their boldness and confidence. I mean, it was like, whoa, they were taken back. Look at their boldness and confidence. The second thing could be seen as a negative. They perceived that they were uneducated and untrained. But it was according to their standard. You didn't go to our schools. Well, they went to school all right. The best one ever. But the third thing, to me, is the kicker. It says, and then they realized. You know, the question is, why are they like this? They shouldn't be. They realized, and here's the kicker, that they had been with Yeshua. Love that line. Oh, they realized they had been with Yeshua. People who are with him get changed. They have confidence. They have boldness. They have a message. And they do it under adverse conditions. Wow, they're different. When people are around him, they change. And these guys really believe this stuff. They're willing to die for it, you bet. How, do you believe it like that? I know a lot of you do. And you may be called to do just that in the future. Okay? They had been appointed by him. In Acts chapter 4, they knew who they were. Okay, they were confident. They had been appointed by the Messiah, commissioned by him, given a message by him to give, to be delivered. And they were doing it. Then in two chapters later, in Acts chapter 6, I love this too. Okay, the qualifications for entry-level leadership to clean tables. Okay? Here's the qualification. Not that you know how to clean the table, but that you are full of the Holy Spirit and faith. Now, when you go to a restaurant, do you ever think that that's maybe what your waiter should be his qualification? I know they have other skills, but that's not in the list. Okay? Entry-level leadership, you are filled with the Holy Spirit and people that are full of faith, because when you come to that table, you're doing more than just cleaning it off or taking somebody's order. You're making a connection with someone. And that's called a divine appointment, and you and I are faced with those all the time. And I pray that you recognize. Sometimes it is your waiter or waitress. Happens all the time. Okay? But the foundation for entry-level leadership was godliness, not ability. It was godliness. I'll take the godly people. I will too, anytime, any day of the week, because they're teachable. Okay? Anybody had the ability to wait on a table. But anybody, just anybody, isn't godly by character. In Ephesians 4, you know, the spiritual gift section and the offices. The gifts and the offices are based on a spiritual structure, not a natural ability. A spiritual structure. That God did something supernatural. He gave you something that's not naturally in you. He made some changes in you that are miraculous. And it tells us in that section in Ephesians 4 why. I'll read it. You know this, but just work with me here for 10 minutes. For the equipping of the believers, for the work of the ministry, for the building up of the body. Now you know that line. We're going to tear it apart. For the equipping of the believers. Those are the giftings, that you be equipped. For what? What for? For the work of the ministry. Okay, you're all in ministry. And then what? For the building up of the body. Okay? Equipped. For effective and successful ministry. The word equip. 2 weeks ago when Ubaldo was here, I kind of warned you we're going here. Here we are. The word meanings are important. That word 2,000 years ago was used in the writings of the time for the setting of a broken bone. When a bone was broken, the doctor would set that bone. It was being equipped. For putting a joint that is out of place back into place, fixing something. It was also used, and in the Gospels, that's how it's used, for mending nets. It means this, putting something back into the condition that it was designed or intended to be. It started off this way, but something happened, but we're going to put it back in the condition that it's supposed to be in. Okay? And then it's equipped. It means fixing, repairing something. We are to become what we were intended to be. And that's ambassadors of Yeshua. That's the intention, to represent him and do it well. Okay? Mending the nets. We mentioned that when Ubaldo was here a little bit. Fixing the tears in the net, because the fish get out. Removing the trash. That's what fishermen do. They put trash gets in there. Take out the trash. Okay? We need to mend our nets. So why? So they can catch people. So they can catch people. We're to be properly equipped for catching people. So, a little more in reach today then. Have you been casting out your net? Or are you keeping the grudge? If you don't cast the net out, you're not going to catch anything. Okay? And one might wonder, they say, you know what, you have a really nice net. In fact, it's brand new. It looks like it's never been used, actually. Well, yeah, I wouldn't want to use it because if I take it out there and throw it out in the water, it's going to get, you know, dirty and trash will get in there and it's going to rip and got, you know. Nice net. But it's not going to do what it's intended to do for staying in your garage. If you're going to use your net, it's going to get ripped. There's going to be trash. So fix it. Fix it. True story. Okay, some of you may know that I enjoy certain kinds of car racing. All right? It's right down to the, it's contact. It's a contact sport, let me tell you. Okay? But I know, and I have known people in the past that have owned a race car, a very expensive race car, and they're beautiful. The paint is perfect. The pinstriping, even the numbers are almost, it's perfect. The chrome. But they never drive it. In fact, it goes to car shows, and it gets put on display. Isn't this beautiful? Yes. Now, the ones at the track, the dirt track, are they beautiful? Man, they got scratches on them, and they get bent sometimes, and holes in the fiberglass. But they're doing what they're intended to do. They go really fast, and they're a lot of fun. But you could have a museum piece, or you can have something that's working that needs to be repaired all the time. That's us. We're always in a state of needing some repair. Well, fix it. Fix it. Or the new coat. I got this brand new coat. It was on sale. It was great. But you never wear it. Well, it might get dirty. It will get dirty. What's the point of having something nice if you just stick it in the closet? Cast out your net. You just might get lucky and catch the big one. Okay? But if you don't cast it, guess what? Nothing. Which brings me to Luke chapter 5. Please turn to Luke chapter 5.
Some personal fishing stories coming up soon. Okay, Luke 5.
Luke tells us, verse 1, so it was as the multitude pressed about him to hear the word of God. Look at that. They were coming to do what? To hear the word of God. That he stood by the lake of Gennesaret. Interesting, Luke is contrasting his physical stance. And he saw two boats standing by the lake. But the fishermen had gone from them and were washing their nets. In other words, mending. Mending their nets. There's a great verse. And he got into one of the boats, which was Simon's. This is Peter's boat. Peter owned a boat. Okay, by the way, in a few weeks, we're going to be working with some of the parables and interpretations. And so here's some examples I'll be giving you on proper interpretation of things. Okay, Peter was a disciple of Yeshua. I'm a disciple of Yeshua. Peter had a boat. I don't have a boat. So you're supposed to buy me a boat, right? That's what they said. More on that later, see? What I'm going to read to you, though, are people that actually interpreted the Bible that way in time past. I'll read you exact quotes from their books that are just hilarious. And you go, they're a poor congregation. Anyway, that's how some people see stuff. I used to have a boat. Anyway, he's in Simon's boat, and he asked him to put out a little from the land. And he sat down. Now, there's the contrasting in the stance, because when Rabbi teaches, he sits down. Okay? He sat down and taught the multitudes from the boat. And when he had stopped speaking, he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, okay, now wait a minute, we have a little transition here. Okay, Yeshua is the rabbi. He's the theologian. Simon is the fisherman. He has his own boat. He has his own business. He's lived there all of his life. He does the fishing. Yeshua does the teaching. All of a sudden, Yeshua's crossing the lines here a little bit. Okay, crossing the line. He tells Simon how to fish. He tells Peter. He says to Peter, launch out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch. Marianne Mackey, look at the next line. But Simon answered. See, that means there was resistance. See, that's why there was resistance. Simon answered, Master, we have toiled all night and caught nothing. Well, if you ever want to have this experience, take me fishing with you. And there's a good chance that will happen. I'm consistent on this one. Okay? So keep that in mind. Now, Simon the fisherman knows what he's doing. His boat, lived at the lake all his life, had a bad night of fishing. Okay? Nothing. He's just kind of telling Yeshua, you know, you don't know what you're doing. Stick to what you know. Stick to the theology. I'll stick to the fishing. Okay? He's kind of implying that. But I think there's some interesting eye contact going on here. Because, okay, I think it goes like this. Master, we have toiled all night and caught nothing. And I think Yeshua doesn't say a word. He just keeps looking at Peter as if, I just told you something. And Peter gets them, and probably the other disciples are looking like this too. Who's going to talk first? Okay. Peter, are you going to dig the hole deeper? You know, or, and then he says, Then Peter realizes, nevertheless, okay, nevertheless, at your word, even though you don't know what you're talking about, I will let the net down. Even though I'm the fisherman, know what I'm doing, and you're the rabbi, but well, nevertheless, I will let it down and show you there are no fish. That's, I think, what he's thinking. Now, it's interesting, when you do what Yeshua says, things happen. Huh? When they had done this, they caught a great number of fish, and their net was breaking. Oh, man, you got to fix the net again, right? We just fixed that one. So they signaled to their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled both the boats so that they began to sink. Isn't it just like Yeshua to kind of overdo stuff? You know, overdo it. Okay, enough, Lord, okay. Simon, you said there's no fish. Okay. I don't want to lose my boat. It's sinking. Okay, you better listen to him. Look, he knows what he's doing, even when the fishing, okay. And when Simon Peter saw this, he fell down at Yeshua's knees, a position of worship, and said, "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord." Peter saw that he had verbalized in front of the other disciples that I don't trust your judgment. And he's repenting. Okay? For he and all who were with him were astonished. Now, when the fishermen are astonished, you know you got something. They were astonished at the catch of fish which they had taken. And also were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. So there was a partnership in a fishing business. And Yeshua said to Simon, "Do not be afraid. From now on, you will catch men." From now on, you will catch men. And the next verse is the reason for the message. Successful discipleship is right here. And when they had brought their boats to land, they forsook all and followed him. They didn't even cash in the fish to get the money. Okay? Because this was the day that discipleship came into being. Yeshua said, "Okay, we're going. We're going after men, not fish." But Peter, I just wanted to show you. When you cast out your net, when I tell you, see, he said, "You're going to catch men, Simon. You're going to catch men." Their very best day of fishing would be their last. There's irony in this. Think about it. I mean, logic could have been, we can make a ton of money doing this and then give it and invest it in ministry. Look at that. Wow, their best day of fishing. Well, the question is, do you want to be a successful fisherman? Or do you want to go change the world? Okay? By imparting the most important message of all time to all people groups in all places. And then you're imparting something of eternal value. It'll make an eternal impact on their very souls. Or you can be a successful fisherman. What do you want to do? That day, they changed vocations. Their best day. They changed vocations. Why? Hey, I want to be with you. I want to be with him. You see, the motivation in our hearts needs to be, more than anything else, I want to be near him. At the cost of everything else. Peter, you could have made $1 million fishing. I want to be near him. The formula for being a successful disciple: they forsook all and followed him. Now we have time for one more. Turn to Matthew 17. Since this is not Luke, but I'm going to give you a taste of our study in Luke coming up, because we're studying it from a Jewish perspective, and you'll be shown things all through the Gospel of Luke that you haven't seen before. And I'll give you an example today out of Matthew. Matthew 17, verse 24. All right, this is tax time. We have a little tax section here today. When they'd come to Capernaum, those who received the temple tax came to Peter and said, here's a question. And again, it's a malicious question. "Does your teacher not pay the temple tax?" Whoa, hang on one second. What's going on? Well, those of you who have been with us to Israel know that the tax booth between two territories, two Roman provinces, was there in Capernaum, between the kingdom of the Golan and the kingdom of the Galilee. And it was also on the Via Maris. It was the most lucrative tax booth in the country. Okay, Matthew is the only one who records this for us. Matthew was what by vocation? Tax collector. Where was his tax booth? Capernaum. That was his old job. He took note of that. And what happened was they came through and they had to pay the temple tax, I'll explain it in a few minutes, and they didn't have it. Sometimes it's nice to see that they had the same problems we do, right? They couldn't pay it. So they come to him to criticize him. They come to Peter because they saw I was in charge. Peter, doesn't your master pay the temple tax? Now, this isn't the same question that the Sadducees asked, or the Pharisees asked at a different time. Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar? Because this is a Jewish tax. It's a temple tax, different thing. And everybody had to pay that. Really? Is that true? Everybody had to pay that? Hang on. I'll come back to that in a minute. Maybe not. But the deal is that Matthew caught this one because that was my old job right there. And now Yeshua is in trouble. And so is Peter. They didn't have the money to pay. So what are we going to do? Okay? And Peter said, well, yeah, we pay. He's kind of thinking, well, when we have the money, we pay. We don't have it right now. And when he had come into the house, Yeshua was anticipating him, saying, what do you think, Simon? Isn't this cool the way Yeshua talks, just like we do? So, Simon, what do you think? From whom do the kings of the earth take customs or taxes? From their sons or from strangers? You know what he's saying? Well, I'm going to come back to this. This is important. Peter said to him, from strangers. And Yeshua said to him, the sons are free. Nevertheless, Marianne, okay, lest we offend them. And here's what he tells them to do. Now, this is a teaching for Peter. Okay, now, Peter's teachings were in several parts. This is one part. We'll put this together with the last one we just had, with the net and all the fish. He tells Peter, here's what I want you to do, a fisherman. Go down to the Sea of Galilee, take your line with the hook, your pole, cast it in, and take the fish that comes up first. And when you have opened its mouth, you will find a piece of money. Take that, it's a special kind of tax coin, by the way. Take that and give it to them for me and for you. Okay, what's going on here? The question was asked with malicious intent. They were hoping Yeshua wouldn't pay because they're trying to get him every chance they get. It was a Jewish tax to maintain the temple compound and to pay the Levites, okay, people in ministry. It was an annual tax. They did keep track of all this stuff. If you didn't pay it, first of all, you're violating the law. It's a part of the law of Moses to pay that tax. So they're looking, any time he violated the law, they want to point that out. Second of all, he would not be allowed on the Temple Mount. Pretty big deal. But he doesn't have the money. What's he going to do? Okay, the question he asked Peter is interesting. He's saying to Peter, do you think we really have to pay that? And Peter's answer was, well, no, we don't really have to. What are they talking about? The royal family was tax exempt. Now think about this a little bit. Who is sitting on the throne? Some guy named Herod, who's of the line of Esau. Not Jacob, not Judah, not David. Esau? The high priest is not of the line of Aaron. These are all appointed offices by Rome. Who should have been king? Who has the right to sit on the throne of David? Who's of the line of David? We have two genealogies of Yeshua that say he has a right to the throne. When we study Luke, we'll show you what that is saying. Yeshua had the right to sit on that throne. Legally, he was tax exempt because of who he is. Legally, he didn't have to pay. But he's saying to Peter, you know what, Peter? Okay, I'm going to teach you a lesson about being an example to other people about what to do and not to stumble them, because they won't understand this at this point in time. So we're going to pay the tax. Now, the amount, it says that tax coin paid the tax for Yeshua and for Peter. Here's another example of Yeshua. Peter is a disciple of Yeshua. I'm a disciple of Yeshua. Yeshua pays Peter's taxes, therefore you should pay mine, right? You need to stay awake. Stay awake on this side, okay? The book of Luke is going to be fun, okay? We're going to have a lot of fun in Luke later on. But, okay, so he pays Peter's tax too, as well as his own. All right? Now, the amount of that was the equivalent of 4 good days of fishing. 4 good days. Or of this, catching the right fish the first time. Okay, here's a question. What are the chances? I love stuff like this when it happens in your life. What are the chances of a fish swallowing that coin, the tax coin, special coin, and then you catching it on your first cast? What are the chances? None. None. It's really nice to have Yeshua around at tax time, isn't it? So be it with us, okay? Okay, but he's teaching Peter some lessons in discipleship is what he's doing. The other one was, you know, Peter, I know you were out there all night and you didn't catch anything, but if you just do what I say, I want to show you something. Okay, and Peter did what Yeshua said. He went out and he threw the line and he got the fish. But the lesson is, who is in charge of the fish? You might be a good fisherman, but you're not in charge of the fish. Who's in charge of the fish? Well, Peter's learning, well, okay, I'm starting to get this. Peter, the next part of the lesson is, who's in charge? Who's in charge, Peter? Okay, why call me Lord and do not the things that I say? He is Lord. He is in charge. Peter was told in the other teaching that he would soon be catching men. All right, his first big catch, remember that one? Acts chapter 2. Pretty big catch. Quite a catch. And those who cast their nets after that continue to catch fish for 2,000 years, including you and me. I got in a net, couldn't get out. And now I'm casting nets. You and me. We're in this together, by the way. If you forsake all and follow him and cast out your net. Now let's think about this for a second. If you do what he said, in these two cases, if you just do what Yeshua said, you got the fish. Okay? If you forsake all and follow him, and you cast out your net, I think as your leader, I got to tell you something here. You better get ready to do something with all the fish, because you're going to catch them. What are you going to do with them? Because it works. If you get your net out of the garage, the nice one, the new one, cast it out, you're going to catch fish. You're going to catch men. But then you got to do something. What is that called when we do something with them? It's called discipleship. We're to teach them, train them, raise them up. To be fishermen with their nets. That's what we do. But remember, who is it that brings the fish into the net? That would be Yeshua. You do the casting of the net, he brings in the fish. Okay? Into your net and my net. So get your nets clean. Get the trash out. Fix the tears. Get it ready, but then use it. Okay? You know why? Because we don't have much time. We don't have much time. Time is of the essence. Remember the question he may have asked? Why do you call me Lord, but don't do what I say? Discipleship is doing what the Master has taught us to do. Okay? Let's be doing what he has said. It's as simple as that. Well, as I was praying about this, I go back, way back in my life, about 2 weeks, when Ubaldo was here. And in the book of Acts, we got to chapter 13. The Lord spoke to us. You know the story. We began to start doing the book of Acts. God led us to Ubaldo. And while he was here for the second time and meeting with the missions board and with other people, we're learning about him. And some of the things that we learned about him were things that he doesn't know. I think back, well, that's where I was 20 years ago. I was where you are right now. Okay? But we're learning what he doesn't know. But we're learning that we know that stuff. And it's our responsibility to impart it to him. Okay? We've made that commitment. That's what missions is all about. But we also learned what he wants to know. He wants to know what we know. and do what we do. Okay, that's what he wants to know. But it's the next step that's really cool, I think. And he wants to then be able to do what we know and to tell others how to do it. But it's even past that. He wants to go out and plant several other congregations and have that process happening. And it's all, you know, he sees us as his role model, you as his role model. Quite a responsibility to impart to him. That's what the book of Acts is all about, what missions and the Great Commission is all about. We impart what we know. And then they take it and impart that to others and to others and to others. And just seeing that flag, you know, it's really neat because it's working. We're doing it. That's going to Uruguay. The Israeli flag, because there's an Israeli connection, an Israel connection. It's because of you and who you are and what and how you worship. If we're doing what he said, a lot of that is that we are the example by how we live our life in doing what he said and teaching what he taught. And we are to impart that to others. And then as he learns those things, he imparts it to others. This Passover will be their first Seder. We had a Seder for Ubaldo. And we taught him how to do it. He's doing it the way we do it. He's duplicating us. He has all my notes. He's going to have them translated. But that's what it's all about. We have duplicated, we are duplicating who we are. Each holiday will be the same way. Okay? And there's more to come, more to come. So when Yeshua walks in the door, I hope we hear him saying, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You're doing what I said. And you're calling me Lord because it's true. I am Lord. Well done." And you know what? We can do it. We can do it. We can do it. And so what I want you all to do this afternoon is take your fishing poles and your nets down, cast them in, and get the rest of our money, and get to the bank by Monday. Would be good, okay? I think about this, and you know what? Maybe he'll provide through a miracle like he did here. I don't know. But I'm praying either the natural or the miracle. But it comes from him. In this case, he didn't have any money, and it came from him. Let's pray. Thank you, Lord, that you've called us to a lifestyle, to be a role model and to be an example. And we're to walk in his steps as he walked. We're to represent him. We're to teach what he taught. Lord, help us to be able to answer that question. Help us not to sheepishly look down if he would ask us, "Why do you call me Lord, but don't do what I say?" I pray we'll hear, "You call me Lord, and you're doing what I said. Bless you. Thank you. Well done, faithful servants." Yes. May we be about the work of the ministry he's called us to do. He has given us clear instructions. May we follow them and nothing else. Lord, for these needs that we have, I lift them up. It was so simple for you to send Peter down with one hook to get the money they needed. We look to you and ask this morning, based on the truth of your word, to do a miracle in our congregation. A provision of finances. And Lord, we'll give you the glory and the credit because we confess before you we can't do it. We simply can't do it. We look to you. But I thank you that page after page, when people look to you, you came through and you did it. People were healed. They were restored. Relationships were mended. The most unlikely people of all time came to faith in you, the scribes, the Pharisees, priests, those who were at one time your enemies became your ambassadors. Lord, remind us that when we cast in the net, we're going to catch fish. We're going to catch people. I pray that then our congregation would be ready to provide the discipleship, the teaching, and the training. And I thank you that we've begun. May we continue. Thank you for your word and your faithfulness to it in Yeshua's name.
Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob,